Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast, a product of the Globally Ballin podcast network. We have a fantastic interview for you today, so sit back and enjoy, and thank you all for joining us one more time. Here's the music. I gotta let you go. Finish the game with a broken hand.
Yeah, finish the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
Young man, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us as athletes were taught on it, use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, "Jay, get me out."
At the same time, there are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey, my last season.
Okay. Country with a lot of snowy mountains, you'd think would be pretty good at downhill skiing. That's not all wrong. If we look back at past medals for the Winter Olympics in alpine skiing, you see a lot of Austria and Switzerland. The Swiss Alps. That makes sense, I guess. Norway's in here too. Also, plenty of mountains in Norway. Super G to giant slalom. Still a lot of Austria, a lot of Switzerland. There's some other ones in here. There's a Germany sprinkled in here. Yugoslavia, if we go back to 84. There's other ones in here. But there is a lot of Austria, a lot of Norway, a lot of Switzerland. Why? Because they have the mountains right there. They're able to train. They have the resources available to be practiced and well prepared. Let me give you another scenario. What country do you think should be really good at the Olympic sport of beach volleyball? Well, if we take the logic from earlier, you'd probably guess countries with a lot of beaches. It's not a bad guess. Not a bad guess at all. What about a country with 7,000 islands? It seems like a pretty good country to put your money on, as is often the country of focus when I'm outside of the United States. The Philippines is that country. 7,000 islands strong, at least. And yet, you'll hear from the interview, they're not even a guaranteed win to win beach volleyball in the Southeast Asian Games, much less the Asian Games, much less the Olympics. According to the FIBA World Rankings in beach volleyball, the pair of Cici Rondina and Bernadette Pons of the Philippines is tied for 222nd. Countries that also share the stage of 222nd is a pair from Brazil, four pairs from Canada, known for their beaches, of course, pair from Finland, pair from Norway, two pairs from Rwanda, among others, like Cyprus. Is it as easy as that? Is it true that all a country needs is the resources around them to be successful in a sport? Can a warm weather team compete in hockey? Sure, they can, and it's happened, but you wouldn't be so far off to throw your money if it was a blind bet on the colder country team. Just like if you're talking about beach volleyball, throwing your money down in the country with a lot of beaches. Makes sense. And it's odd to see that that's not necessarily the case. So there must be something else. There must be another part that's holding them back, holding a country like the Philippines back from reaching the full potential that it could in beach volleyball. This theory in question could be transferred into any country that seems to have the resources and is lacking in a certain area. One could argue the United States in almost every sport, with the training facilities that are found in this country all across the country. There's really no sport that we should be struggling in. I remember one of the best rants in sports is Alexi Lawless going after the U.S. men's team after they lost to Trinidad and Tobago, saying there is absolutely no reason why they should have lost and miss the world. Our next guest kind of feels the same way. She does have a culprit. She does have a reason as to why they're struggling in beach volleyball, or at least not as good as they could be. But I think it's safe to say it's a lot of anger too of, why is this even happening? How are we even in this situation? It's beach volleyball. You need a beach, you need a net, and you need a ball. They got the beaches. All they need to do is find a net and a ball. That's it. There's your training. Now, of course, there's more to it. There's time. There's intense preparation. There's finances that need to be secured if you can't be at work because you're training. All of that is part of why my next guest is a little bit frustrated. I think it's fair. But it begs and raises the wonderful question that we had before. Is it the government's role to fund? First of all, is it the government's role to fund international sports to begin with? And if it is it their role to fund sports that A, bring money back, even if that team is terrible, or to bring back or to invest in sports that bring in a gold medal, even if that gold medal doesn't have the same financially that a terrible team would? It's an interesting question. I honestly don't know. That's why I interview people, because they answer stuff for me. All I gotta do is ask. They're smarter than me. All I do is ask and listen. They answer, and I love it. But moving forward, because I want to get to the interview, beach volleyball is only a piece of this. Wonderful guest, Cassie Gormley, American, living in the Philippines, has lived there for a very long time, goes into all the depth. She's very much a part of the volleyball life over in the Philippines, connected and all that good stuff. So she gives great insight. We talk, you know, everything from indoor volleyball to beach volleyball to the general idea of what imports can do, to the potential import ban in the UAAP, to this Southeast Asian Games, to are players ever going to be getting more money, and the role of government in international sports. It was a great conversation, and I actually held her far too long on the interview. So Cassie, for listening, thank you for all that extra time. That was fantastic. Conversation flowed very well, and I really didn't want to end it because it was very interesting and very helpful, and our conversation transcends. So if you're listening right now thinking, wow, I don't care about Philippine volleyball, and I don't care about, maybe you don't care about beach volleyball at all, there's some other deep kind of sports philosophical discussion in this interview, which is fantastic. So I'm going to get to it. I've already been talking this intro for far too long. I want to thank Cassie for her time. And I'm going to thank Cassie for her time. Thank you, Cassie. And good luck out there and everything you're doing. So enjoy. Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by an additional sponsor. We are now also brought to you by Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, right outside of Dallas. You may remember we've had an episode in the past with the founders of Creating Young Minds, Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to help young men achieve success in their life where they may not have otherwise achieved that success. One way they do this is through their new basketball team. The Lewisville Yellow Jackets, affiliated with Creating Young Minds, play in TBL, the basketball league, and through a combination of their nonprofit as well as their basketball team, Creating Young Minds and the Lewisville Yellow Jackets are doing their best to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. That is Creating Young Minds. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, basically everywhere. Find Creating Young Minds, check them out, see what they're all about. And when the TBL league rolls around once again, keep an eye out for the Lewisville Yellow Jackets. Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Cassie. Is it Cassie?
Yes, Cassie.
Okay. Hi, Cassie. How are you?
Doing good. Very good.
Awesome. So to start off, why don't you just introduce who you are and what you do?
I'm Cassie Gormley. I'm an American. I live here in the Philippines. I've lived here basically my entire life, and currently I am studying at the University of Santo Tomas. It's one of the UAAP schools. It's like this confederation here in the Philippines, similar to the NCAA in the States. And I played beach volleyball for the school for the first 2-3 years in college, and then I got into the media here. So I started being sports analyst and then an anchor and stuff like that, and then that got me into being an announcer for the sports league, the UAAP.
Okay, so currently while in school, you're focusing on the announcing aspect of sports, so that's what you're doing right now. Is it strictly volleyball?
Yes, I do indoor and beach volleyball.
Okay, and guys, girls, just girls?
Guys and girls.
What is kind of the current state of volleyball in the Philippines right now?
Well, in terms of what, popularity
Popularity, let's start there.
So volleyball actually in the Philippines is doing well when it comes to popularity. It saw a spike, I think, back in 2000. I don't actually know what year, but season like 70 of the UAAP. It was actually the Fab Five of Ateneo. So you interviewed Z a while back, Z Hervasho.
Yep. Yes, I did.
So she, her batch were like the underdogs of the season, and they went to go all the way to the finals, even though like no one expected it. And so that kind of sparked the entertainment aspect of the game. And so people started following this team, following the players. They started getting involved in the game, and it just grew from there. As of now, there's a lot of fans for volleyball, especially women's volleyball. Women's indoor volleyball. A lot of them follow specific athletes. A lot follow specific teams, like the school that they like in the league. So as of now, women's volleyball is much more popular than men's volleyball. But yeah, it's the fans are very interactive. They're very vocal online. And some will travel by plane just to see a specific player or a specific team.
What does it look like for an athlete kind of during her college career as far as off the court and interacting with the people around them? Do people recognize them off the court?
Yeah, they're kind of like celebrities, but it'll depend on what school you're from. Basically, if you're from Ateneo La Salle, you'll get recognized a lot. Like if you're just walking in the mall or on campus especially. But a lot of the players now from other schools, just as long as you're good, if you're like a star player on the team, you'll get recognized and people will ask you for pictures, for autographs. They're like celebrities.
Okay, and so does that go throughout the entire country or is it more centralized in Metro Manila, or will we find that as they expand out?
Actually, it's even crazier when you go to the provinces. Like they'll have mall tours in the provinces and hundreds of people will just flock over there and to see them. But again, I want to clarify, it's for specific athletes or specific schools in the women's league. So like the likes of Alisa Valdez, Gia Morado, these are the people that the fans really, really, really want to see. Or the champion team this past season, Ateneo. It gets crazier once you go into the provinces because they don't get to see them often. And so when they do visit or when they do go, like it's a big deal for them.
Sure. Yeah, I can understand that. What does it look like after college as far as if they pursue some sort of career in volleyball professionally in the Philippines?
Well, right now it's really not feasible to be a pro athlete after college. A lot of the athletes, college is their peak. College is their prime. And it's like that because these commercial teams or these club teams don't have the financial means to offer them an amount where they don't have another job. So what happens is they'll pursue a professional career, but they also have a day job. Like they'll go to the office and then train at night. So you get what I'm saying? It's not,
Yeah.
They're not able to live off of the salary of being a professional volleyball player. Unless like select few star players from bigger organizations. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with like Rabisco. They have their Creamline team and Chocobucho team. There are some players on those teams who get enough where they don't need to get another job. But as of right now, it's hard to be a professional athlete. A lot will just go in, find a regular job, or like I said, get two jobs if they want to still continue playing.
Do you see that changing in the near future to a point where the volleyball players are making enough to that being their only thing that they need to do?
Well, as of right now, it's dependent on these companies being willing to shell out that much money for them. So I'm seeing it as more of a passion investment by these big players. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's not really a huge business move on their part. It's probably more because this guy is a volleyball fan back in college, wants to support this player, this team, blah, blah, blah. But it'll only change when the system changes because there's two people or one or two people really controlling like the PVL, the PSL. These are the semi-pro and professional leagues for volleyball. And with these two or three people still in power, they call the shots. And without that changing, I don't see how clubs will find it feasible to continue to invest in a system that's broken.
Well, if we look at leagues all around the world, it's very rare that a team owner makes money from investing in a team, any sport, right, in any country. So that doesn't surprise me at all that they're not making money. But my question then is, if they continue on the same path that many, many leagues do around the world, and that's not making much of a profit. What do you see that needs to change specifically in order for them to still continue to drop money into it, knowing that they probably won't at least not make a profit back, but may not even make that amount back?
Well, we've seen it in the PVL where there are teams that that just dissolve because they don't win. So I think that with a balanced team where there's not one that's rising above everyone else, or like obvious win every single game, like, you know what I'm saying? Not one team that doesn't dominate.
Sure.
Like if it's more balanced and everyone's getting wins, I think that's more attractive to them, because the more you win, the more popular the players get, the more popular the team gets, the more popular their brand becomes.
Yes, I agree. I'm just thinking for a second. I do wonder, though, if everyone is closer and it's more equal, then you won't, will it be true then, do you think, that you won't have as high of a level of stardom as you get with the star teams and star players now, because some of those players do dominate?
You're saying there's not going to be, like, the same fan base?
Well, I wonder if you take away the dominance of some of the teams and kind of even it out even a little bit, will some of that fall away?
The way I see it, the fandom starts in college and it just carries over into the professional league. And so with the balanced teams, you already have the fan base of these superstars. They're already there because these fans are so loyal. And I don't want to like assume anything, but I am optimistic in thinking that they followed their careers even after college. And so my thinking is going into the professional league, these fans are already there to support whoever they supported in college. And with the more balanced distribution of star players, they'll gravitate towards supporting whoever they supported in college in the first place. And if it's balanced, other players will get more recognition or popularity. It's just an added spotlight. It's not dimming anybody else's. It's just spot on, an addition.
Okay. I can understand that. So I want to, hypothetically then, do you think it would be better off for those leagues to have or strengthen a limit of like financial cap that you can pay a certain player to even it out, to make sure some of the less financed teams are able to compete for some of those high market players?
That's hard because the salary is already so low. And with some of the market value that these superstars bring, I don't think it's fair to them either, because they're not only like really good, they're super influential on social media.
Yeah.
So cap, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's not unheard of.
Yeah, I know. NBA does it.
Yeah. But then again, I guess the flip would be if there is a cap, those players are free then to play in another country, say South Korea, with a higher ability to pay. So there are some negatives and potentially positives if we're talking about evening out the competition a bit.
Yeah, but so far, like in terms of leaving because they're not getting enough money, we just don't have the players like that to do it. Like there's probably 3 or 4 in the entire country that are able to go abroad and play competitively.
Sure,
in
yeah.
Another country.
I guess Eliza was in my head, and I guess that was the one I was thinking of. But
right.
So.
But yeah, I don't think the league right now is ready for that type of limitation on the players, but it is an issue because these rich teams, they just offer a lot of money, and that's why they get good players. But a lot of the times as well, they're a winning team, and so players will switch over to a winning team as well. But it's because they're a strong team. Not only do they give you a lot of money, but really, really good.
That is very true. And we see that in sports all around the world. The players want to play on a winning team. Also, if that team's going to offer you more money, it's better too. The other thing, though, on the flip, it does put all the pressure on that team. If they have all the stars, then they're going to win a lot, but they also have to, because then they're an embarrassment if they don't. I do want to ask about your general idea on what you think about imports. Are they helpful to a league that's developing or not?
Actually, the UAP is having this discussion right now. I don't know if you're familiar.
I am.
You're familiar with the UAP?
Yeah.
Okay. So did you see the news about they're talking of taking out imports in basketball?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't think that's a good idea. I think they elevate the game. Just like getting an import coach. When Coach Tab Baldwin came here, like the coaches got better, the game got better, the league got better. And I think taking out import players players as well. It's a bad move. I mean, it's already good. They have a rule. You get 2 imports on a team, 1 playing inside the court at a time. Like, there's a limitation to it. Like, I don't understand why they should take it out, because everyone plays better. There's new talent that we're seeing, you know. It's just a different level of play that we're able to witness, that we're able to learn from. I think it's good.
Well, then I'll push the argument completely the other way then. If imports do improve the talent of the people playing, then why should there be a limit at all?
Well, because you still want to promote your local athletes. If they're all imports, then San Yung Pilipino, like, di ba?
Yeah.
It's still a Filipino league.
And at what... Yeah, and at what point then do we decide what number is right? So did 2 sound right for you for basketball?
Yeah, like I'm good with the rule.
So you're there at the moment. What is it? Does it feel like that's what's going to actually happen? Does it feel like the ban is going to go through?
I don't think so. And because you see, like, okay, if you're watching basketball, because as of right now, there's only, I've seen 2 so far play in the UAP for volleyball. And then I see, like, there's so many in basketball. But if you're watching, they're not, like, high and far beyond everyone else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, nakakasabay yung mga Pilipino. But, like, even in volleyball, we have Milena Alessandrini. She's an Italian. She came here when she was, like, 19, I think, and she plays for UST. Like, she's not super, like, she's not amazing, you know? Like, Cici Rondino was better. It's just she's got the height. She's got, well, basically the height. And she herself is being developed here by a Filipino coach. And so it's not only an opportunity for the Filipinos, it's an opportunity for these imports. They want to study here in the Philippines and get a good education. And why not let them play sports?
And so what does it look like as far as imports go with professional volleyball or PVL?
PVL and PSL, I've noticed, are, like, very different when it comes to their imports. Like, PSL, for some reason, they get really strong imports. Like, they're really, really, really good. If you watch Petron, if you're familiar with them, Petron, yeah, and F2, like, their imports are insanely sobrang lakas. And the recent one, Hardy was here, Mao, I'm thinking Stalzer, Cat Bell, Niemer. These are, like, all from the F2 and Petron. And, oh, except for Hardy, she's in Signal. But they're so, so good. And a lot of the times when I would watch PSL, it's like whenever the ball went to them, patay na to. Like, oh, they're going to kill it. Like, it's done. The rally's over. But the longer you watch, the more into the game you get. You see that even though they're, like, super strong, like Don Makandili, like, she can dig up those balls. Denden Lazaro, Maizo gets the block, you know? Like, even though these imports are really amazing, the local players step up and they're able to compete. Nakakasabay. In the PBL, I think a lot of the teams don't have the financial means to get really amazing players like the ones in PSL. I don't want to be, like, super biased, but that's what I'm seeing. And, like, Kutika was the strongest. Johnson was here too. Those 2, I think, were the strongest imports the PBL has ever had. But as you can see, like, they're not super tall. They're just outside hitters, which is what the club teams are looking for. They want outside hitters. Usually you'd think, oh, middle blocker because they're tall. But a lot of the balls are usually set to outside hitters. So that's who you're wanting to recruit. That's the smart move anyway. Yeah, a lot of teams were forced to, like, switch out an import in the middle of the season because they weren't performing, you know. But they definitely help. They make the game more exciting, I think.
So you said PSL is a little bit more able to afford some of those players, at least that was your guess. And
yeah,
what kind of numbers are we talking for PSL import?
Oh, yikes. I have no idea.
No guess.
I just know I know PSL. I know PVL.
PVL, can you give me a number for that?
A little over 100.
100 what?
Like 120K. Pesos.
A month?
Yeah.
Okay. A couple more quick things I want to hit on. And that is, first, the growth of beach volleyball. Because we talked with Z and we talked about some beach volleyball. And I know you have been working with that. So what can you tell us about beach volleyball in the Philippines?
Beach volleyball, like, has so much potential here. Just, like, besides the location and, like, the availability of these players, it's that we're good, because I'm thinking internationally, right? So I'm conflicted because I think indoor is great and everything, and our team is getting better. It's just that when it comes to international leagues, the Philippines should be entering more sports or focusing on sports that we can actually win, you know?
Yeah.
Like taekwondo, boxing, track and field. Like, why not put more money into these sports?
We talked, I don't mean to cut you off, but this is perfect, because I was talking with another guy who works with me for the Philippines, and we were talking about how much money is dumped into basketball, and then they go to FIBA World Cup,
exactly,
and they get destroyed. And so it does beg the question of, there's some real legitimate competition that Philippines has, but the money doesn't go to it.
Yeah, I know players who are on the national team of taekwondo since high school. Since high school, they're there. And if they're just developed, like, they could be amazing in international leagues. Not only taekwondo, like swimming. I know players that are on the national team right now, and they're still in college. Like, we're legitimately good. We have a fighting chance in these other sports. And beach volleyball is the same way, because for beach volleyball, you don't need, like, siempre, height is important, but it's not as important as it is in indoor. If you're a guy playing indoor volleyball, you have to be tall, unless you're a libero. Like, everyone has to be tall. In women's volleyball, it's not as important as in men's, but it's still important. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And go ahead.
And in beach volleyball, you don't have to. Like, we have Cici Rondina and we have Bernadette Bonds for women's. They've gotten fifth in the SEA Games before. They've played in FIVB tournaments. They're really, really good. And if we could just develop a national team that trains all year round, that is consistent and takes care of its players, we could have a fighting chance abroad. And the same way for the men's in the beach. Because I'll be honest with you, when it comes to men's volleyball, indoor or beach, they're much more disciplined. Like, they train more often together. They train earlier. They're kind of more put together, just because there's less politics in it.
I do wonder, though, is it the rule of the government when investing in international sports to invest in things that'll bring them money back, or to invest in things that will get them a gold medal? I mean, what is more important? And I honestly don't know. I wonder, because we know, sorry about it, listeners, you're not going to get a gold in basketball, but they do bring a lot of money back from that. So I do wonder if that's more important, or should it be more important than investing in something that might get you a gold?
So you're asking if they are looking for a return or a gold?
As far as when the Olympic Commission gives out money to fund athletes, because we talked about them giving money to basketball and Philippines doesn't do so well. Should they be giving out money to sports that'll get a gold, or sports that'll bring back money?
Well, obviously, for me, are you asking me or what?
I want to know what
they're
doing.
Well, obviously, they should be looking for a gold, because, like, whatever is popular, that's what's gonna return, get more money back. Like, if you're gonna invest and looking for a return, the sports that are popular is what they're gonna invest in, and that's what we're seeing: basketball and volleyball. But even volleyball, they're not even doing that much, because it's private corporations that are financing these players to go abroad. It's so frustrating, because the Philippines, they just don't value the athletes. Because why are these private organizations, why are these companies the ones financing them going here, going there for training, their food for training, their accommodations, everything? The LVPI doesn't do anything. It literally does nothing. In beach volleyball, we had the FIVB tournament. It was all Beach Volleyball Republic. Bayetan, Charles Soriano, Zihar Vasho. These girls were basically financing the Philippine team. Like, they organized the FIVB event, right? But Philippines is playing in the event. So theoretically, the LVPI should subsidize these teams, Team Philippines, that's playing in the FIVB. Like, give them their hotel, get them their food and allowance, gear for playing. But what happened is BVR did the event and is also paying for Team Philippines to play in the event. That's not their job. You know what I'm saying?
Some would argue, though, with you, just so you know, that it's also not the role of the government to be paying for sports, right? Because that money's coming from your taxes. And, you know, that would be pushback. Like, we get that here in the U.S. all the time, what the government should be spending money on and not. And so some people, I'm sure there's plenty of arguments saying that the government doesn't have to, and it's not their role to put money into sports.
Okay, they don't have to, but don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
Oh, I would agree with that. I would agree with that 100%. Right. If you're not going to dump anything into it, then don't expect anything out of it.
Yeah, I think people are just frustrated because they see actual potential. They see actual, like, it could happen. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the taste what could become. People are so frustrated because they can see that it's a possibility.
Sure.
And the government's not doing anything.
Right. And we talk about a country like the Philippines. It's got beaches everywhere you go. It's insane to think that you couldn't have a very competitive beach volleyball program around the country. Mm-hmm. That brings me to the last thing I want to quick talk about, and that's looking onto the SEA Games coming out in November.
Right.
Your expertise is volleyball, so we'll just stick with that. How does the Philippines look compared to the Southeast Asian teams in indoor and outdoor?
Well, I'm just looking at their training so far.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how many stars you have on the team. Like, UP is a testament of that in the UAP. Like, individually, you can be amazing. You could be a college superstar. You could dominate the pro leagues. But if all of you haven't trained together for an amount of time that's acceptable, then you can't expect anything big.
Sure.
And so with that, I don't think, like, the Philippines, our indoor volleyball team, they played against Vietnam in the, what is it, ASEAN Grand Prix?
Yes.
Yeah, they played against those teams. They did well. But again, those aren't like, that's not the actual roster of those teams abroad. But still, we got to see them playing together. But realistically, our indoor women's team has not trained together consistently because they all have commitments to their club teams, and they're just unable to train together at nights or whatever the days that they're supposed to. On the men's team, on the other hand, they've been training together consistently. Like, what they did was they have their club team, and then the Philippine team is entered into the league that these club teams are playing in, right? So if you have Mark Espejo playing for Signal, but there's a Philippine game the next day, he's going to play in that game also.
Yeah.
But gotcha. if it's Philippines versus Signal, he'll play for Signal.
I see.
But the men's team, they're pretty consistent. They train all the time. Well, according to their Instagram stories. And beach volleyball, like, they've been training because they waited for the UAP to stop. They waited for the UAP to end in beach volleyball. But there's some kids that played in the UAP that will play in the SEA Games. So they're conditioned. But again, they have new partners. So hopefully they can work out the kinks there when it comes to getting the chemistry with your partner. But again, not that much time. I think they just started like hard training last week, which is already super late. But I'm optimistic.
Yeah, it's coming
up. Yeah, I'm optimistic for Cece and Fons because these two, I'm sure you're familiar with them.
I am.
They're really amazing. And every time they join a tournament, they don't train for long and they do well. And so, like, I just wish they could, like, just grind more together and be unstoppable, you know? Because if they don't train much and then come up with fifth and, like, quarterfinals finish in the FIVB, like, imagine what else if they actually train consistently and for a longer period of time.
Absolutely, yeah.
So as in terms of, like, prediction, I'm not counting too much on it. Like, siempre, they say laban Pilipinas, but there's only so much they can do, you know? If they weren't given enough time, if they weren't given, like, the proper training and to be ready for this, can't expect much. I think the men's team could. This is super optimistic, though. They could get to the semis. They could get a podium finish.
For beach or indoor?
Indoor. Beach, it's more sketch just because they started training last week. And the new partners, like Krung and Jude, last SEA Games, the one in Singapore?
I think that was the last one. I had to double check.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that one, Krung was partners with Calvin Sarte, which he's not playing anymore. So he has a new partner. And yeah, they got to develop, of course. So I don't know. I don't, Like, I love the guys, but I just don't think it's enough time to get a medal. For the girls, that still, it's more possible for the girls because CC and Pons, they already started training even during the UAAP with the USD team. So they kind of already, like, their chemistry is, like, solid already. Like, they're always on point together. I think it's just more of developing, like, strategies and their individual capabilities as well on the court. But I'm optimistic for them. I think they could get a medal if they really grinded. For indoor women's, we're going up against strong teams. Thailand's super amazing. Vietnam with their star player is really, really good. For women's, I don't think we will make it that far, you know? I hope we do. I always hope we do, but I don't think so.
And it's going to be interesting to watch, especially, you know, I have a little bit of a connect, or I have a pretty strong connection there, but in the end, I'm in the United States and I'm an American, so I can hand out and just kind of watch a little bit. So it's going to be fun to watch that from the outside. Is there anything else you'd like to throw in that we haven't, that you wanted to say, anything at all?
I just want to say my frustration from the status of volleyball in the Philippines.
Good.
It's more towards the government. I just don't think it's being highlighted more by the organization or the people in charge, because I think there are other people that are more than willing and more than capable of taking care of our national teams. And I just wish they were given the opportunity to take that role. And it's more with them, the frustration, because I love the volleyball community. It's so amazing. Like, the fans are incredible. The players, they love each other. It's just overall a great community to be in. And I'm glad that I'm in it. And I hope that one day it'll be given the chance to flourish and thrive and get to where it deserves to be in the Philippines.
Awesome. Thank you, Cassie, very much for your time. We appreciate it. We went a little over, which is great. Thank you for all that extra. So thank you.
Sure, no problem.
I really enjoyed that interview. So thank you, Cassie. You know, I talked about most of that in the intro as far as kind of what to do brief on about what that was all about. And Cassie has some really good points. I think it's so interesting that a country, like I said, with 7,000 plus islands still struggles in beach volleyball, you know, but it also proves the point that it's not just about what you have. I mean, there's other countries with snowy mountains that aren't winning as many golds as Switzerland and Austria. It also happens that Switzerland and Austria are very wealthy countries. Coincidence? It's got to be part of it. Again, I'm not an expert. I'm growing through the knowledge as I continue to do these interviews. And I think you are, too, as you continue to listen to these. We're all kind of learning. We're kind of piecing it all together. And these all fit. You know, we talked to Reem Mousa, who is a national basketball player in Egypt. And we had that great discussion about what does GDP and population have to do with the success of a nation in an international competition. And we saw there that it's not necessarily a direct correlation. There's a lot involved. And so I can see that it can be very frustrating for a country that everything's right in front of them. There is essentially some money to be funded for competition. They have the beaches. They have the athletes. Why can't they do it? And, you know, it's an interesting question. Is it as simple as some countries just don't invest as much time and money or percentage of GDP into the success of a nation in international competition? It could be. And even if you think that's not the role of the government, I think what Cassie said is fantastic. And that is, if the government doesn't want to provide, the government better not be complaining about the results. That's like, you know, people who complain who didn't vote. If you didn't vote, you can't complain. That's the rule. If the government doesn't fund it, and it doesn't work, okay? And it almost is a little bit annoying, too, because if an athlete does win a gold, let's say, and they didn't receive a lot of government funding, and they received a lot of money from a private corporation, who the private corporation said, I believe in this athlete, I'm going to put my logo on them because it's going to bring in money, and because I believe in the athlete, and the athlete succeeds. That corporation's going to get a lot of attention, as they should. It was their investment. But the thing is, the government's also going to get a lot, too, because they're wearing that country name and that country flag as they hold on, and the national anthem being played as they win the gold medal. So either way, the country is going to see a return. I'm just talking myself through the discussion. Either way, the country's going to see a return if somebody wins a gold or not. So does that mean they automatically need to invest if they're automatically going to see a return on a gold medal? I don't know. I won't sleep tonight because this will be in my head all night. This is what I have to deal with. The other thing I wanted to quick touch on and mention that I loved was the discussion on the idea of imports. This has always been something on my mind and has come up in interviews before. Do imports ruin or help? First of all, do they ruin or help a league? And then do they ruin and help the development of the athletes in a country? I think those are two very, very different questions. Maybe equally as important. They're both very, very important. So on the one hand, they're great for a league, right? If you want the best players playing in a league, drives up competition, drives up fandom, ticket prices, advertisement costs, everything goes up. Sponsors make more money. They in turn invest more money. Contracts go up. Everything continues to go up and up and up and up as talent goes up and up and up and up. Now, the bad side to that, if you're bringing in the best people in the world to a league, you can drown out local talent. Local talent then can't really train or at least get good proper practice on the stage that it should, and they suffer internationally. But on the other side, if you keep too many imports out, then they don't get a taste of what the rest of the world looks like and how good the rest of the world is in a specific sport. So on the one hand, if we take Philippines basketball, you don't want too many because you want as many Filipinos to get an opportunity to practice and play and train in basketball. On the other hand, you don't want none because you don't want them to be unexposed to the basketball talent outside of the Philippines. So you got to find that equal balance. And that's where that conversation about the UAAP getting rid of all imports seems odd. I try not to give my opinion often, but I don't see how that would benefit. If you keep the number low, and you find that happy sweet spot of a number, I believe it benefits everybody. It sounds like Cassie feels the same way. And I think as we continue to interview, whenever that question comes up, I think most people around are going to agree. And if you look at leagues around the world, most have imports, but they also, almost all, most have limits on their imports. I think it's a happy medium. So that was great. I don't want to debrief it anymore because we had a great discussion. So I want to thank Cassie for her time and her interview. Really appreciate it. Appreciate her passion, not only for the Philippines in general, but volleyball and the growth of a sport. That's kind of what I love. I love to watch the growth of these sports and leagues in places you may not be familiar with them being in the first place. And so I love to watch development leagues grow and succeed. But more importantly, I like to see people behind them with passion, like Cassie and Z, who are behind, and others like them, but those are the ones I got to speak with, that are behind these league wholeheartedly. David Magley, behind the basketball league in the United States, interview with him. He's there, and Cassie and Z are there. They're carrying the brunt of the growth of a league. If a league succeeds, it was on the backs of hardworking, passionate people. And that's why I like to talk to them. Hardworking, passionate people that want to see a league succeed and grow and develop the people in a country and develop a sport nationally and internationally. So thank you, Cassie, for your time. Good luck out there. As always, we like to keep an eye out from our past interviewees and see you succeed. So hope to hear back from you, maybe on a future episode. We appreciate it. Take the time to say another thank you to Z for her time way back when. And all of you out there that are developing and pushing for the growth of leagues. We've gotten into so many of them. We're going to continue to get into so many more. Thank you for that. We appreciate it. You mean a lot to those of us who love sports. So thank you. And as always, thank you, listeners. I wouldn't be doing this, talking sports philosophy with some of the most passionate sports people around the world that I am, without the support that you give me. So thank you for your support. Thank you for your continued support and your continued belief in the mission of Globally Ballin'. And so I appreciate it. And thank you all very much. Thank you all for making it through another episode. A couple things I got a quick run through and then we'll be done. First, if you haven't already, go ahead and follow us on our different key platforms. First, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/globallyballin. Also, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, and then Twitter at globallyballin. The Instagram and Twitter are by far our most active, and they're also very different content. They're actually run by different people. So go ahead and make sure you're following both of those, and they'll also both alert you for when something new is posted either in the podcast or Patreon, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. Also, when it comes to the Facebook account seems less active, and we're aware of that. It's different kind of content, and more is coming to the Facebook page, so you'll want to like it to make sure you're ready when a new wave of different content, which is coming soon, starts to make its way on there, which is exciting. Finally, though, is the Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com and then you search Globally Ballin', you're going to find our account. $3 a month, and with that, you're going to get a couple of things. First, shout out to all the supporters, which is great, which is actually
Also really good for any of you athletes out there. It's a great way to get your name, your brand, your place where people can find your highlight tapes, all that stuff. That'll be plugged in our episodes, which is great. So if you become a patron for the $3 a month, you'll get that. In addition though, what we're really kind of excited about, not that we're not excited about the other one, is that you're gonna get a bunch of extra content. It's gonna be different from when I originally recorded this to when you're listening to this now. We're gonna keep adding to it. There's a lot of different stuff. It might just be extra stuff that didn't fit into an episode. And there's also a whole new, different kind of content called Candid Conversations, which is basically a whole new show that we started. As the name suggests, it's a conversation between me and somebody else. For whatever reason, it doesn't fit into an episode. And if you go check out one of those Candid Conversations, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So that $3 a month, you're going to get your shout out and your help to support your brand or get attention to your highlight reel or whatever, plus a lot of extra detailed fun content in addition to this free podcast. So go and check that out. Refresher, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/globallyballin, Instagram @globallyballinofficial, Twitter @globallyballin, and Patreon, patreon.com/, search Globally Ballin, and you'll find, do the $3 a month patron if you're interested, and get all new content, a bunch of additional content. If that's not for you, totally fine. We still really appreciate you supporting and listening. If you have any suggestions, make sure you send us a message. Again, because we're most active on Instagram and Twitter, that's the best way to send us a suggestion. We'd be happy to listen and try to get anybody in that area and that sport, that country, that topic that'll help you best. So make sure you send us one of those requests. Otherwise, thank you again for listening. You'll hear from us again next week.